Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking about episode 4 of season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. It's called The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, bringing back thoughts of Hannibal Lecter there. With tensions and stakes high as Starfleet continues in their efforts to end the war with the Klingons, Burnham begins to settle into her new position aboard the USS Discovery. That is the episode description taken from Memory Alpha. It's I feel like you could use that to describe a lot of episodes, but that's what they gave me. It was directed by Olatunde Osun-Sanmi, and screenplay goes to Jesse Alexander and Aaron Eli Colite. Aired back on October 8th, 2017, which is yesterday. Apologize for the delay in this one, but we just, me and Clay, who's here. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I just also got back from the Spore Drive known as New York Comic Con, so.
Yeah, it's affecting your vocal recognition software.
A little bit.
We also got back from a wedding last night, which was a good time, so hello to Matt and Lindsay, who I don't think listened to this, but I will say congratulations to them. And so that's why this is late. Me and Clay are going to talk about The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, which you watched this morning. Is that right, Clay?
I did. And if I had known that they did not listen to this, I would not have gone to that wedding.
Right, exactly. Anyway, guys, I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
The Glen's captain made an earlier entry that security detected a stowaway. There was no hull breach and no unregistered microbiota in the transporter's pattern buffer. But this was found, rummaging around in the lower cargo decks.
We need to find something Lorca can use on this thing.
Poison sacs, pain inducers, rage glands. You judge the creature by its appearance and by one single incident from its past. Nothing in its biology suggests it would attack, except in self-defense. Commander, this creature is an unknown alien. It can only be what it is, not what you want it to be.
It's amazing how much I hate Vulcan proverbs. You're new here, so let me share a piece of wisdom. Lorca isn't interested in what you are. He's interested in what you can do for him. And if he needs us to make that thing useful in his war effort, that's what we're gonna do.
All right, Clay. So, you know, objective fact, we'll get through that. The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry is a great title for an episode. Brings back shades of TOS season 3, I think, when they had episodes like For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky, which is another great sci-fi genre.
Which I just saw a trivia piece that is the only other Star Trek title longer than this one.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a good title. It's brings back TOS season 3, and I think Deep Space Nine season 6. It kind of reminds me of a few episodes that come along in that one. But anyway, we're going to be talking about The Butcher's Knife Caring Not for the Lamb's Cry. And I think we're at an interesting point in the series, right? We're about 25% of the way through season 1. I feel like we should have a pretty good understanding of where we stand at this point. And I think there's starting to be a schism in how people are seeing the show. So I don't know if we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this episode in particular, or if we're just going to sort of spend a lot of time talking about where we stand with it. But let's start off with, what'd you think generally of Butcher's Knife?
Well, you know how generally the way that people have been talking about the last episode is that it's sort of like the proper pilot of the show. And I did not really care for the last episode, and I think it falls under the same umbrella of most shows where the pilot kind of sucks, because I really liked this one a lot more than the last one.
Okay.
I liked what they were doing with some of the stuff they set up. The Klingon story was good. I really, really, really liked what they did with Burnham in this episode, having her put in charge of finding in charge of weaponizing Ripper there, the big, you know, slug guy.
Yeah, the tardigrade, I guess, is what we're calling him. Either that or Ripper, yeah.
Yeah. And then her taking the initiative to find a non-violent use for it. But on top of that, I think the thing for me that's going to be kind of like, I've kind of come to terms with the Spore Drive as a concept, because I don't think the science is really worth explaining, but I think it works as an emotional concept.
Yep.
Because the continuation of the tardigrade story with Burnham is that even though she's found a non-violent use for the creature, the benefit to the ship is at the cost of seemingly causing pain to the tardigrade, which she is not cool with,
right?
Clearly,
yep.
And that ethical idea and ethical problem is something that I find interesting, and I think is a very Star Trek kind of thing to deal with. So I like that the captain, even though he's still kind of mysterious, it's not quite as black and white as they seem to be setting it up to be, where it's like he seemed to have an ulterior motive. It seems like all of his motives that were seemingly ulterior, everybody seems to know.
Right.
It's just his captaining style is a little bit more manipulative than some people that we've seen in the past. We talked about this a little bit last episode. I am not expecting like a late season turn from him. And this episode didn't make me think any different. Like, it seems like that's just how he is. I'm not expecting him to turn out that he's like a bad guy. But okay. I could be wrong, but I'm just not expecting that.
Yep. I think that I went back and I rewatched Context is for King, and I tweeted about it a little bit. My problem with Context is for Kings is that it felt to me like it was an episode that was not particularly interested in the details of what was going on with itself. Like, it has a lot mm-hmm. of odd scenes where, you know, the opening of that one is they're coming in, the prisoners are coming in on the shuttle, and they run into those electric eating aliens. And so the pilot of the shuttle walks to the back and it kind of has this casual walk. Like, you know, yeah. if the back door of your car is open on the highway, you pull over and you casually walk back and you shut it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a few seconds later, she's apparently fallen off the ship and is dead. And no character on the show mentions it. It's just this weird scene of why did this happen? Like, why did you bother doing that if you're not going to make a big deal out of it? And I felt that the episode is filled with moments like that where Burnham breaks into the lab while people are in the lab. It's like, why don't you just shoot it with no one else in the lab so that I'm not questioning why this is a problem?
And last episode, we did not even touch the breath lock.
No, we didn't.
Which might be the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen.
It's certainly the easiest, like, DNA get around sequence. Like, as they show in the episode, all you have to do is have someone breathe on a cloth and hold it up to the thing, and it works.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And so my problem with Context is for King is that I didn't think it was a particularly good episode because it wasn't really grounded to me in a lot of ways. It felt like things were just kind of happening and moving on. And I actually felt the same about this episode. So I think that we sort of disagree about what we consider to be the quality of this one. I felt that, and Mindy on Twitter, who I was talking about earlier today about this, said it best, I think, is that Context is for Kings, she could kind of absorb as a generic sci-fi show, and she thought that that was fine, where this episode felt more Star Trek-y to her, mm-hmm. and I agree mm-hmm. with that this feels more Star Trek-y, but it's not a particularly good episode of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of it, my big concern at this point, like the problem I have with the show, outside of the fact that when I finish watching an episode, I'm never like, oh, hot damn, I wish I had the next episode to fire up right now.
Yeah.
The bigger problem is the fact that the show is using a lot of, you know, the fans online are complaining about the overuse of Dutch angles, and they shoot a lot of the ship shots by the camera will twirl into the bridge, showing you that in space there's no up, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that the narrative is the same way for me. I have nothing to hold on to in this show because everything is either happening too fast or there's no emotional weight to anything that's happening, or I don't know what's important and what isn't important at this point. And I think the glaring error part of it is the Klingon war, right? Apparently we're at war with the Klingons during these episodes. And we don't see any aspect of the war directly. And we have a terrifically bizarre scene in this where the Discovery, what's ostensibly a science ship, beams into a attack on apparently a very poorly defended Starfleet thing where they get all their dilithium from. And if they lose it, they've lost the war. It beams in there, it shoots a couple ships, drops like an H-bomb in space, and gets out, and apparently it saved the day. So yeah. I don't understand where we need a single episode that basically just sets the table for what the universe and where is the war at this point? Like, where right. do we stand in these things?
Yeah, I didn't love the episode, but I thought it was a big improvement over last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of that stuff that I was still unsure of. Like that scene in particular was very strange because yeah, it's the place where they get the majority of the dilithium from, but there's nobody there to defend it.
Right.
And so when the Discovery shows up, they show up and they don't shoot the ships. They just wait.
They shoot two of them and immediately destroy them. And then they wait until the other ships are close enough attacking them. Yeah.
And then they just fuck off and blow and like leave a bomb behind and blow the other ones up.
Right.
And they don't even offer any aid whatsoever to the people they just saved.
Yeah. And when they get to the place where they run to after they dropped it, they're all happy, but no one would know whether it was a success or not. Right, like they don't have any way of knowing whether or not that worked, or if they blew up the miners who were right beneath them and stuff like that.
And why did they do? Why did they like the captain says something about sending a message, but what message are they like? I assume they were trying to show off the power of their driver, but like they kill everybody. Well, why do they need to? Why do they need to use the jumping as a device to kill people?
They drop bombs or something. They do
right. I know that, but like why?
Why?
Why don't they just? They shot two of the ships when they showed up. Just shoot the other two ships.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and the thing for me is that like, well, if this is such an important base, why are so few Klingon ships attacking it? Like, if this is going to win the war for them, it feels like they should just have their entire fleets over there bombing it. And that's really I have no sense of what the war is doing at this point. It's like totally on the periphery, and it's apparently the driving force of the show. And I was thinking that it ties into an episode like yesterday's Enterprise in TNG, right?
Mm.
Picard has a line in there where he takes the other Captain Garrett aside and he says, you know, the war is going very badly. We have 3 months until the Federation thinks that we're going to surrender. That single line clarifies everything about what they're doing in that episode.
Right,
like that explains why you have to make these choices. Mm-hmm. And Discovery isn't doing anything about that. It's not explaining why these things are happening, what the rush is. I don't feel a relationship to the drive behind what's going on because I haven't seen any of the Klingon advances against them or anything like that. Like, I don't know what's going on in the universe.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And even on the Klingon side of things, I like what's going on from like a character standpoint, as far as you know, I forget his name, the white one there.
Oh, it's Vok and Terrell is the woman, and then there's Kor is the evil one.
Mm.
Yeah,
I like what's going on with that, where they kind of had that double cross thing there. But even there, I don't get this. Like when they said that they had been stuck there for six months, with no food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these guys are supposed to be like the uniting factor of the Klingon people, right?
Like, they won the battle. Like, I don't understand why they're just floating there.
And T'Kunva's ship is supposed to, I just assumed, was like the rallying point flagship for this whole war.
Yeah.
And they're just like floating there by themselves with nobody helping them? What the hell's going on?
Right, yeah. And I think you brought up a good point. I like the character work of the Klingon stuff, but I don't understand the mechanics of why it's happening like this.
Yeah.
I actually, it seems to be an online thing. People are pretty unhappy with the Klingon subplot. I kind of disagree there. I'm okay with it. Mm. I do agree. Some reviewer brought up the fact that Klingonese is kind of too slow of a language in a lot of ways. Like, you need to pick up the pace a little bit. I don't know if you disagree with that, but I just feel that the Klingon stuff is interesting on a character level because there's actually only three characters in the show that I currently care about, and two of them are the Klingons. And the third one is Saru on the Discovery. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy the fact that I like the relationship of those two Klingons, how they're sort of fighting against these corrupt houses, and they have like a little bit of things going for them. I don't really fully understand at this point why T'Kunva had to die, because I feel like I would relate to him being in this position better than Vok, who in the episode himself says, "I just met T'Kunva like last week, so I don't know why he appointed me in this position."
Yeah, he's kind of a wet blanket.
He is, yeah. I don't get a fully divine drive from him like I got from T'Kunva, which would make more sense for the characterization. Yeah.
And I think one of the problems with the Klingons is, the language is too slow. And whatever they've done to them, I feel like it's... I like Cole a lot, the guy with the face paint.
Yeah, the evil one.
Because, he felt more like a Klingon to me.
Right.
The other ones, they... I don't know. It seems like the changes that they've made, maybe it's just the makeup or something. It's just... I feel like they don't have any personality as much.
Yeah.
And Cole seemed to have some personality. He seemed to be a little bit more of a like a classic kind of Klingon personality. But, I mean, when it's just the other two, their scenes are just people standing there going, muh, muh.
Yeah.
Muh, 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 muh. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I didn't need my volume up very high because they were, you know, giving me the subtitles and everything, which was fine because I didn't, you know, I didn't want to listen to it anyway. But I don't mind what's happening. It's just I don't know. That main guy there is, he's just, for me anyway, I think he's a load of nothing.
Yeah.
The woman is interesting. I find the woman interesting, but I don't really like him very much.
Right. She's the one sort of driving the, she's being the sort of Machiavellian one behind the theocracy of it that the other one's pushing. And so I think that's, she's obviously going to show him sometimes you need to give up your beliefs to get the end goal accomplished, which is also what's happening on the Discovery at the same time.
I'm kind of hoping what he has to give up is like after the next episode, he comes out without any bumps on his face and he just looks like a 1960s Klingon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they'll have to get into it at this point. I don't know. We don't have to stay on this for a while, but like, was this show, should they have just made the show Kelvin timeline? Do you care at this point, or is it like anything that
No, I mean, I don't know why they just didn't put it in the future.
Right.
Like, I just don't understand. I mean, I guess you could make the argument that putting it in the future means that you're limited by less, but even so, it's like it doesn't matter because they're doing stuff technologically that you couldn't do, that none of the other shows in the Prime timeline have ever done.
Right.
Like, that,
not unless even, they haven't brought it up. No one has ever mentioned this before, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't really care. It just makes me wonder why they bothered to do it. I mean, I can only assume that it was because... Well, no, I was going to say I could only assume it was because they wanted the time period of the Klingon War. But, I mean, there's no reason why you can't just have everything that's happened can't just happen in the field. Like, why can't there be another Klingon War? You know?
Yeah, there's no – if you said it 100 years after Deep Space Nine, you could just say that the Federation and Klingon empires have fallen apart.
Yeah. And, like, you know, the technology thing, I don't really care about that much. But there are some times where they do stuff where it's, like, just grossly, grossly – out of character for the time. I mean, for anything in the Prime universe, like that magic face fixing ray that they have, where
it fixes your skull fractures.
Yeah, Stamets busts his face open, and then they just like shine a light at him, and it just fixes it. It's like, no, they've never ever been able to do anything like that.
I'd be okay with it if they didn't say he had skull fractures. Yeah. Like if they just said he broke his nose, I'd be like, oh, that's a little bit better. But yeah, it's a tech that's a little bit easier. I want to get into this whole topic of the tech and stuff because I kind of have I have an idea of maybe not what they're going to do, but I want to talk about like what they're implying needs to happen with this storyline going forward. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the in general, my general takeaway continues to be that I feel that the show is not grounded yet. I feel that Alan Sepinwall tweeted today that he thought he's not reviewing it, but he just gave a quick thought. So if he thought everything on Discovery was rushed and everything screeched to a halt with the Klingons and what was going on. And I think that the Discovery stuff is rushed. And it's also that I still do not care about anyone on the ship, really. And to an extent where I don't even find Burnham very sympathetic. And I feel that I should to make this story make any sense. They have scenes with Burnham, right, where she's studying this tardigrade thing. She's doing the science officer stuff. That's all good. That's probably, in my opinion, the best stuff of this episode is the homage to the Trek idea that you can't judge a book by its cover. And maybe you should study something before you try to go with the obvious answer about what it is. That's fine. They want to do that. So she's studying the tardigrade. She calls in Saru, And she's like, hey, man, I want to apologize. You know, I treated you kind of bad. He's like, oh, that's great. Like, maybe we can be friends. She's like, aha, your little threat hairs didn't stick out. So I know this thing is not dangerous. Why does she need to trick him to do that? Why doesn't she just call him in and be like, hey, you know, look at this thing. Why? She only sabotages their relationship by tricking him into calling him and pretending to apologize to him.
Right.
It feels like, what's the point of that interaction?
No, that whole scene was weird to me because it was, there's a certain, you can kind of tell, that scene was written specifically to hit that plot point because the entirety of the scene is he walks into the room and she says the stuff that she's going to say, he says the stuff that he's going to say, they do the thing with the you know, shit on the back of his head, and then he just leaves.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, I mean, they just needed him there to do that. Like, there was no other purpose for that scene.
Yeah.
And
why don't you write it like an accident? Like, he wanders in and she notices
exactly.
It.
Yeah. I don't know why they needed to do that, except that they want to keep up this
antagonistic thing between the two
of
them. Yeah.
Which they don't even really lean into that much. Like, they give you a little bit. Like, they don't, I should say, they don't interact enough in the episode or in any of the episodes so far to really give you a good sense of where that relationship stands.
Yep.
Because, you know, in this episode, the only two scenes they have is that one and the one towards the beginning where he makes kind of like a snarky comment about her being on the ship again.
Yeah, on the turbo lift when she walks in. Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're supposed to be, you know, better friends or what. I don't, like, their relationship is still kind of weird to me.
Yep.
I didn't really care. I mean, I guess it makes sense because she was an idiot, but I didn't really care that the Tasha Yar character got Tasha Yar in this episode.
she's a horrible character. Right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I liked her in the first episode, but this one I was like, this character sucks.
First off, she just comes in. She, you know, she's just got a sourpuss on all day. She comes in there, she's trying to boss around Burnham to do what, and then she's like, you know what? Let's do exactly what didn't work one episode ago, and I'll shoot it with a laser, and we can see what happens. And then she gets died. I was really only surprised that she was in fact dead because I thought that she might be a main character, but no, she's just gone, and it's a totally pointless death.
Yeah, well, I was expecting they had just set up. They have that magic ray that fixes you. I figured they were just going to put her into like the toaster oven and pull her out, and she was going to be fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, but that ties into my point of all of these scenes are rushing to get done, and there's no emotionality to anything. Like, I don't feel anything for these characters who are dying. I didn't like that character in the first place, and she's dead. Too bad. Like, I guess that's one less character I have to remember their name of, but like. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have any time to get to know these characters. And also, it's tying into the fact that Star Trek, the show, came in saying, you know, like, we're going to embrace modern TV values and we aren't afraid to kill off characters. It's like, this is the bad kind of killing off characters.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no, you gain nothing from doing this way.
And I think part of it is, as much as I like in the first two episodes that they just kind of throw you into it and let you kind of, they just kind of, you know, throw you into the middle of the situation. Now that you're kind of settled in with the show, can you tell me the rank of any of these characters or what they do in the ship? Like,
I believe they're all lieutenants, and that's only a guess. I have no, just say everyone's a lieutenant.
But like, you know, think about TNG, right? When Tasha Yar gets killed, It's a big deal that they have to replace their security officer. Like,
right.
Worf gets it. Worf gets a promotion, and that's a big deal. And like, any time that kind of thing happens, where there's a person, an officer who gets killed or whatever, changing ranks is always a big deal. Promotions are always a big deal. I have no idea. We had this discussion last week. Is she the security officer? Is that what her? Is that what she does? Seemed like to be what she was, but I don't even know if that was what it was.
Yeah, I think she was like, she might have been tactical or something, because she has a line. She's like, "With your science knowledge and my tactics," so I assume she's supposed to be the tactical officer or something. But
and like Stamets seems to be the engineer, but they've never really said that.
No,
he's just sort of like the lead scientist who works in engineering,
right?
And Burnham's roommate there, what the hell does she do?
She's totally pointless.
She's like an analyst, right?
She must be, but like, what's the point of that? What is going on with that character? She's just going to be an obnoxious person who stands around all the time. Like,
She's just there to be the quirky friend, I guess.
Yeah, it just feels to me like it feels like the characters were conceived before they had the script going, and they're just like plugging them into places, and it doesn't feel cohesive as a whole. And I sound more negative. It's not like I thought it was a terrible episode of TV or anything, but it was really like the flaws that, you know, the people who are sort of disagreeing with my take about the show would say that because this is a serialized show, you have to give the show time to sort of settle into things. But it's like my counter argument is that we're a quarter of the way through this. Like I still have no idea what's going on. I need them to establish what is going on, who these characters are, how they interact with each other, and like you say, down to their rank, so that I know who can talk to who appropriately and who doesn't. Like Stamets and Lorca yelling at each other all the time doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And you know, there's one thing. There's a scene that I think they kind of dropped the ball on a bit that could have gone a long way with some of the stuff. And, you know, it was the scene where Lorca gets on Stamets about having the drive ready and, you know, X, Y, and Z. And they give you a little bit of character stuff from Stamets by pointing at, you know, him. His demeanor is basically based on the fact that he's very upset that his science is being used for war purposes,
right,
which is, you know, I like that. I'm down. That's a good character thing.
Yep.
But I have no idea where, like, has Lorca always been? So they talk about how they designed these ships based on like Stamets's research or some shit like that, right? So is he here for that mission? Or is the changing of the Discovery into a warship now something that he has to adapt to? Like, they could have thrown in a line about, you know, having him being like, you know, I'm more of a battle captain, but they assigned me to this, you know, ship, you know.
Yeah.
So at least you have an idea where he's coming from in the way that he's handling everybody. But like, I don't know. I guess the mission of the Discovery is clearly the developing of this drive.
Yes.
Which they've done.
Yep.
So.
And which they've successfully used.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, but I don't know where he stands in relation to the research versus the war that's going on. Like if they had clearly placed him as like, this is a research vessel, but I'm a wartime captain kind of thing, that at least gives you some contrast.
Yes. You understand the friction between everybody at that point.
But as of now, I mean, he's got another quasi-mysterious thing that is not really mysterious, apparently, is his little trophy room there.
Yeah, and also, why is he apparently Chinese? Because he eats Chinese food and he had a fortune cookie.
Was that Chinese food? It looked like... I couldn't tell what... I thought it was the same stuff the Klingons were eating.
Yes, it looks very much like... It looks like a deep-fried seafood or something to me. It gave me slightly an Asian
vibe. What's the thing from... Is it gach?
Yeah, gach. Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't get a sense of where he... Because, like, that menagerie he has there is, like, apparently not a secret, and he is also doing research. So is he a research guy?
Or he's
is
doing
he a
war guy? War research, I guess. So, yeah.
Oh,
but
sure.
I buy into your
But
points.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah. I mean, he...
And also... So, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I would say that the... To me, Lorca... I'd agree with what you're saying. Lorca isn't particularly well-drawn, because I noticed this time that... There's a lot of scenes that open with someone saying something along the lines of Lorca's on the warpath. And from the portrayal of what I see him, he doesn't seem to be a character I would describe as being on the warpath, really. Like,
no,
he's
not really.
He's fairly reserved, and he can sort of get aggressive, but I would argue he's dealing with a crew that puts up a fight against everything he tries to do at the same time. So him being frustrated with Stamets makes sense to me. It's like, listen, dickhead, like, I'm in charge here, just do what I tell you to do. And he gives him the line, if you don't like it, you can leave, how about that? And but I wouldn't describe him as being a sort of irrational captain who's just like, you know, slave driving everybody. I don't get that from him.
Another thing that bothered me is as far as like where you stand and setting the table for things is you know, I like what they end up doing with the Ripper guy there. What the hell's it called again?
Tardigrade.
But the mystery they have to end up solving as to why he was on the ship, the other ship, and what he was doing there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That other ship is doing the same research that the Discovery is doing. It's the same style of ship as the Discovery, but they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
Like, they're doing the same job, but they don't know at where in their research are, or the fact that they've got this giant monster that made their drive work correctly.
Right. You'd think in the war effort, maybe the ship should be sharing this kind of information with
and
each other.
Stamets and the guy on the other ship are buddies.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, why don't they know? Why doesn't Stamets know that this creature exists and was, like, the brain power of this, like, I don't know. It just seems like it seems like a lot of plugging stuff in without thinking about how it relates to each other.
Right. Yeah. Yes, I would agree with that. And that's not to say that maybe they could retcon this into a future understanding of what happens, but I don't feel the need to keep that a mystery at this point. Like, why don't you... You know, it's as simple as like adding lines of characterization. Stamets can be like, oh, that guy, me and him were really competitive with each other, and he wouldn't submit his reports until the last possible minute or whatever, you know? And then be like, oh, and he was probably thinking, he had dropped a clue in his last communication about he had this really special monster of a secret or whatever, you know?
Or like the Klingons were monitoring their communications, so they couldn't, you know, something like that. A reason why they had to keep it secret.
Right, exactly. I think we should jump into the tardigrade here and the sort of the tech take on things, because so I'll just give a basic quick rundown. The tardigrade is the supercomputer that the other ship was using. They can apparently put him, this tardigrade creature eats the spores that they're collecting and using for transport, and it can somehow, they can use it as like the navigator for their system. As long as they have the tardigrade plugged into that machine, which kind of gives them a little titty twister on both sides, he can tell them how to get somewhere, and they can get there immediately instead of sort of beaming into a star or something like that. So the problem seems to be is that the tardigrade doesn't like the machine. It seems to cause him pain at the very least. And now it seems like they're going to be setting this up as this. Do you think that this is the conundrum about the technology that they're using? Is that it?
You know, I don't know, because I feel like this is another aspect of something that if this were TNG, this would all be covered in one episode. Like, they would have figured out, like, the story of the episode would be they find the monster, and then someone thinks it's a monster, but then it turns out it's the brain for this drive. Then they figure out, okay, so then they use it on the drive, and then it turns out that they're killing the monster when they use the drive, so then they have to deal with the ethical quandary of whether or not they should kill the monster to use the drive. And then they end up, like, setting it free, and it turns into, like, a space manta ray and flies into the vortex or something. I think it's going to be a big part, because if that's the only thing that can get their spore drive to work correctly, then, yeah, there's going to be a big fight over it. And honestly, I don't mind that. I think those are always interesting arguments to have.
Yes, it's very much in the theme of the series to have that kind of a show. Yeah,
but I don't know how big of a role it's going to play, because like at this point I still don't really know what the main the story of the season is. I mean, maybe I shouldn't, I don't know, but like I don't get the sense that. Yeah, at first I thought, oh, the development of the spore drive is going to be the main story of the season. But again, that's they did it. It works.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know how much you can how many episodes can you really get out of, oh, maybe we shouldn't use this creature to do this.
I think my point would be if it comes down to the fact that plugging the creature in and causing it a little bit of pain is the reason that they don't develop this technology, that is not good enough for what the series ahead of this do, because to me what goes wrong with this technology has to be something so cataclysmic that no one in the future ever brings it up again. Like, it's never
right.
I mentioned on Twitter, it reminds me of the stem cell debate, kind of like when they developed this technology, people came out against stem cells and, in my opinion, delayed the development of like a lot of medical cures by decades because of opposition about what they believed was going on with stem cells. So the way around it was that doctors had to develop ways to create embryonic cells without like fertilization, basically. So you had to find a way to create the stem cells instead of having a natural embryonic cell appear. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To me, if this this technology is huge. You can go anywhere you want to go immediately. And to drop something that big over the idea that you just caused something, what seems to be a little bit of discomfort, it needs to be something. The story there is too difficult for me to buy in a lot of ways. And to me,
especially.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, especially when like there's plot points in the previous series is about like, wow, we've never gone warp 10 before.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I think they cover that stuff like really like in the original series, like, oh, we've made it to warp 8 or whatever that the cap is there. And then you've got this thing where it's like, oh, warp is an irrelevant technology now that we have this.
Right.
So yeah, I think
they have infinite speed at this point.
Yeah. If they're gonna, there's gotta be some sort of cataclysmic thing that happens, or they just don't care and they just, you know, whatever.
Right. I could see it being that they don't care and they think that that storyline is good enough. And if they do that, I'll say right now, if that's what happens, it's not good enough for me, really. Like that's not good writing to get that way out of it. And I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say again, you wouldn't have this problem if they said it in the future.
Right.
You know, because this technology seems like it would make sense as the next step in space travel.
Yep.
You know, but I mean, who knows? I mean, it would be interesting to see if they do go that way and there is some sort of reason why it becomes, you know, outlawed or whatever.
Yeah. And someone had tweeted at me a little bit of like, a theory that's going around. And I've been thinking about it. And I think it makes more sense judging by what we've seen so far, which would be that people would think that the cataclysmic event, to me, the way, like the smart writerly way to avoid the problems is that whatever this drive does causes universes to split off of each other. And it actually worked really well for me, except for the mirror universe, which unfortunately Enterprise has already shown to exist. If they had found a way to create all the different universes of Star Trek from this series.
Oh, yeah.
That would make sense to me. And it'd be like, oh, in the prime universe that we eventually get to, they choose not to use this technology. They die with the secret, basically, because they see how devastating it could be. And I feel that they need something like that. They need some way to split the story to allow this technology to die off quickly and not be a problem when you think about it in the future. And a neat side effect of it would have been to splinter off in the mirror universe is one of the universes. The Kelvin universe is another universe that they create and things like that.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting, but ultimately, I don't know where that leaves you.
My problem would be that I sort of don't like when they splinter universes because it makes it end up to me feeling like nothing really matters anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my big issue with multiple universe things. It's like, well, then, you know, who cares?
Right. There's a universe where things went well, so who cares about this universe?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, you know, it's... I don't know. I feel like there's still some work to do about... I was watching a little bit of the post show, the After Trek show.
Sure.
And the one of the producers who was on says that the next episode they're going to go pretty in-depth into the spore technology.
Okay.
And hopefully, it would be interesting if they got into... If part of it was the ethics of using this technology, but not just... Not just because it's hurting this thing, but because there is another larger ramification because of the use of it.
Right, yeah.
If this thing is going to be like the focus of the season, there has to be some sort of big reason why they can't just do it.
And what's your understanding of the tardigrade? Is it a mutated single cell organism that they were like, or was she just comparing it for the sake of comparing it? Was this thing like grown or did they find it somewhere? I guess is my question.
That was kind of hard to follow because she was comparing it to the that single-celled thing or microorganism found on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
But she also implied that it ended up on the ship and then it grew, so that it was smaller and then got. At least that's what I think. I could have misunderstood what she was saying.
Okay.
And but I thought that it was like something like it ended up on the ship, and then maybe it was stuck in the spore room or something, and ended up just getting gigantic. I don't know.
And in that case, they exist in nature, and they sort of feed on the spores that are in nature. That's my understanding of what this creature is. Like, they didn't genetically create it; it kind of exists, and they're using it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. I mean, I think we went over pretty much. I'm just going to say this note now because it probably won't be able to fit it in at the very end with the Tasha Yar. Obituary, not obituary, but the sort of goodbye that Captain Giorgio gives to Michael. Why did they only salvage a telescope and leave a dilithium chamber on the Shenzhou?
I don't know, man. I was really hoping after that buildup where she was like, this has been passed down through my family for centuries, and I hope you will use it to brighten the future. I was hoping it was like her iPod.
I was hoping we'd just get a Pulp Fiction.
5,000 songs.
I was hoping we'd just get a Pulp Fiction glow. Like, you wouldn't see what it was. You just said it would be the briefcase glow. But
I knew it was going to be the telescope.
The telescope, yeah. I don't understand why they got that and they left a functioning warp drive behind. But
you know how I knew it was going to be the telescope? Because they showed you the clip where she uses the telescope in the previously thing.
Okay. You saw it coming from a mile away, much like a telescope will do for you.
Yes. I actually kind of missed that. Is that what happened? It was salvaged from the ship?
It looked like a dirty old telescope. It wasn't like a brand new thing. So, and the only time I've seen telescope.
It's hundreds of years old.
Oh, I guess that's true. If it runs in her family. So it's not the telescope from the ship, I guess. Is that where?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, assuming that it was, it does not make sense that they would leave a working drive on the ship.
Okay, we'll assume that it's not the same telescope, and she has multiple telescopes that she deems to be important enough to carry around with her.
Just like I have multiple iPods, one which I leave at my house, and a smaller one that I bring with me on my spaceship.
Once it fills up, back when the iPods came out, they could actually like fill up, and that doesn't seem to be a thing anymore. But they used to be able to run out of space on your iPod. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. I don't want to go out totally negative. So what's some positives here? Would you enjoy the most out of this one? You said you liked it a lot more than the context is for King. So you want to just clarify why you thought that a little bit more?
Well, I just thought it was like the story they were telling was a little bit tighter. As we were talking about the larger scale stuff is still pretty nebulous. But like, as far as this felt like an episode of Star Trek to me,
like
you were saying, not necessarily like a great one, but the ideas they were dealing with felt like Star Trek. The way that the story was kind of split up felt like Star Trek. The resolution from the Burnham thing felt like Star Trek. Like I liked that stuff, and the ideas they were playing with were interesting to me, and I'm curious to see where they're going. And that's always that. If for me, usually, as I've said many times before, if you're playing with interesting ideas, that goes a long way for me.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be perfect as long as you're being like, hey, isn't this kind of a cool idea that you haven't heard before? Instead of just being like a plot, a point by point plot thing.
Yeah.
What else was good?
I like the fact that we're getting more about the crew. It's not enough for me at this point. And the fact that we don't know anything about Lange is no good, but Stamets gets a couple good scenes here. I still don't really know anything about Burnham and stuff like that. Like I'm a little bit disappointed about the Vulcan tie-in here, which doesn't seem strong enough to me. Like, are you buying her? Are you seeing the conflict with this character be her sense of logic competing with she'll do whatever it takes to get the job done? Like, I get hints of it, but I don't really. It doesn't seem like it's the primary struggle to me. To me, it seems like she's more just kind of a secretive a-hole in a lot of ways about what she wants to do. And I don't know if that's the way I'm supposed to take it or if I'm supposed to interpret more of the Vulcan angle on her. What do you think?
Well, one of the things I noticed is they seem to write her dialogue with a lot of Vulcan inflection to it, but they don't draw a lot of attention to it.
Okay.
And I can't decide if that's the right way to go or the wrong way to go. Because I was thinking, like, I feel like the other way that you would end up going is, like, she has a Vulcan mode that she clicks into.
Right.
And I think that would be pretty hacky, I think, if it was like, you know, when the situation calls for it, she turns and she starts talking like a Vulcan and she starts, you know, she turns into, she clicks into Vulcan mode and you know, cuts off the emotional aspect, that kind of thing. But I it was interesting because they seemed to do the Vulcan, a lot of the stuff that she was saying when she was doing analysis and stuff seemed to be very Mr. Spock type dialogue, but she's reading it or she's saying it very naturalistically.
Yeah, yeah.
So it didn't scream Vulcan. You know, they even had a drop of fascinating, which was nice.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, as far as like a larger character struggle, I'm not really seeing it. I mean, I guess that was kind of the point of the scene with Saru.
Yeah, but there's no point to doing it. Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see how that comes out. You know, we can spend we've done it previously. A lot of, like, there's only so many times that we can say we'll see how this pans out before you start to wonder why do we talk about this after each episode. And I don't think that that's necessarily the best way to go. I think it is possible to sort of judge the episodes as standalone episodes. And I think that this, my big takeaway would be Discovery does not really seem to be getting the mix between what it takes to build a standalone episode and what they want for serialization at this point.
Mm. It doesn't help to talk about things saying like, you know, we'll see what happens, et cetera, et cetera. Cause it's obviously we're not going to know until we see it, but that doesn't mean you can't look at the episodes. Like they still have to work on their own, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And I think this one was better, but I still don't think it entirely works in the grand scheme of things. Like there, you can still do serialized stuff, but have it laid out in a traditional television sort of manner, so you know who's doing what or why they're doing which. You know, and they haven't really. I feel like it's a little cart before the horse here, where the serialized nature might be eclipsing
the standalone-ish,
the foundation of what they're of their jumping off point, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I wanted to say that before we sort of sign off, I just wanted to talk about, like, you know, going into it, a lot of the criticism or what people expected would be like, you know, how what do you need to be Star Trek? And this has kind of become an interesting storyline because, like, what is a Star Trek show? At some point, and you know, Trekspertise, who's been on the podcast before, does great sort of video essays about Star Trek, and he did one sort of defending Context as King against what he would say would be sort of the unfair fan base reactions to it, about people claiming this is not Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And he went into a lot of detail about the, you know, there's consoles exploding, there's characters doing this with the transporter, and there's this kind of design, and this ties in, and I don't disagree with him, but I feel that what Star Trek is more fundamental than the aesthetics of what the show looks like. And now people are kind of saying that a Star Trek show is about an optimistic outlook for the future. And I don't even know if that's true really anymore. Like, or I don't think that's necessary for a Star Trek show, would be a better way to put it. To me, what I think that this series is missing and it's not getting right is the fact that, well, a lot of the stuff that I thought was aesthetic before, such as like away teams going to planets and like a chain of command and everything like that, is not actually aesthetic in a sense. It's more Star Trek stories are born from those kind of mechanics of how they do stories. Mm-hmm. And Discovery, having not yet orbited a planet, having not yet had an away team go down to a planet or anything like that, that feels weird at this point in this show to me. And I feel like, once you start doing those more Star Trek-y things, yes, you get the fans who only care about the aesthetic, but you also start setting up the stories that are possible by this is the means to tell those stories. And these are the kind of adventures that crews can have. And you could also have the serialized stuff on top of it, but you need a little bit of that underpinnings, I think, to make it a Star Trek, you know, quote unquote Star Trek show.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, case in point, we still don't know where the hell the ship is.
Right. Well, apparently, you know, it can be everywhere, right? So
yeah. I mean, and that's another thing too. It's like, you know, did you watch the most recent season of Game of Thrones?
Yep.
So the big criticism that I heard, and you know, I agree with, is that the show used to be about journeying between two places used to be like an entire season arc.
Yeah.
You know, and in the most recent season, which I understand to a point because they got to wrap things up, people seem to have the power to, like, teleport between, King's Landing and all the other places.
Yeah, you can be under siege and send a raven, and then in the next episode, an army is coming to rescue you.
You could have, you could be under siege and send a raven, and then have that character who sent the raven get the raven.
Right.
Basically, the way that they were handling it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the same kind of thing happens here when you introduce something like the Spore Drive that takes the Trek aspect out of Star Trek.
Yeah, sure.
Where it's no longer about the journey. It's about, like, there's no journey because now you have save points, basically. You know,
you can
just bring up your map and pick your save point and then jump to that section of the map. And I guess that's probably one of the supporting things in that list of stuff that you were talking about, that stuff makes it feel like Star Trek, is that where is the discovery aspect of being able to jump anywhere in the universe?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I think that's true. And, you know, I could understand it being put off to the side because you're engaged in a war, but we haven't seen enough of the war for that to be my primary concern at this point. Like, we saw the big battle at the start, but apparently everything has spawned off of that. But I think that's a good point. I think we'll wrap it up there.
You know what they should have done? You know what that would have been great? Is if the scene where they use the drive and they go and save that dilithium place, if they had used the drive, but when they showed up, whatever space-time folding thing they do completely just destroyed the entire dilithium.
Right, yeah.
Like, if they gave you some sort of stakes or consequences for using this massively powerful technology, that I think that would go a long way. Because, you know, like, if they use it and it works, but the cost of using it is just so high.
Right, exactly. Which would be the... I mean, I feel that's the storyline that's existed before. They had those the TNG episode, the Irish terrorist episode, where they could use those transporters, but it would kill them over the course of using it.
I don't remember that one. I was thinking of the drunk space Irish episode. That's a different episode,
yeah,
right?
The IRA themed episode of terrorism where Beverly Crusher befriends the terrorist organization.
Oh, right.
Yes, okay. They had that kind of thing. But yeah, we need something along those lines, and I guess we'll see where it's coming up. But judging by the teaser, we've got Harry Mudd coming up in the future, mm-hmm. so that'll be interesting. I guess that's pretty much it. We don't do the ratings or anything like this, but I would agree with you. I thought this was better than 3, but it was still not giving me enough of what I think that the show should deliver at this point. That's my takeaway from it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's see here. Well, guys, anyway, thank you very much for listening. If you're on social media, you can follow all of the show's social media stuff. It's in the video description. It's in the podcast description. There's no patron thoughts because we are all sort of relatively up to date on this. But guys, let me know what you thought, and I'll put up a YouTube poll. Let me know where you think the series is currently. If you click the little button in the upper right hand corner of the video, a little poll will come up, and you can let me know where you think the series stands at this point. It'd be interesting to see what people think. Social media, do all that. Patreon, if you want to go to patreon.com to support the show, patreon.com/thePenske File. You give a couple dollars a month to get extra content. We're going to be having a Halloween-themed month this month. We're doing Halloween and It Follows, so 2 spooky movies. If you guys are interested in listening to that, you can go to Patreon, support the show. As always, the $10 patrons, thank you very much, guys, for supporting the show. It's Tariq Latif, Joint Mango, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Vincent Adultman, Stephen Cobb, Tax Owlbear, and Matt Ross. Thank you very much, guys. We greatly appreciate it. So, Clay, any final sign-off thoughts about what's going on? And I'm going to look up the title of the next episode, actually, as you do that. So, what's your big prediction going forward here into the next episode? You saw the teaser for the next episode, right? Any thoughts? And the next episode is called "Choose Your Pain."
Yeah, it kind of feels early to be kidnapping the captain.
Yeah,
which seems to happen.
Yeah,
but you know, whatever. It's and even there, it's like I don't know why that's a big deal yet. Like, I'm just kind of shocked at that the what's the word I'm looking for? The family dynamic of the ship is not really
not clicking.
Solid yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And so when you go into that stuff where the captain starts missing, that stuff works a lot better if you know where everybody stands. And as of yet, I don't really know.
Right. Would Best of Both Worlds Part 1 have worked as well in the second half of Season 1? Would we have
been no, like this? No. Hell no.
This is just as good. We'll see. They seem to be doing some sort of Clockwork Orange technique on him. So we'll see what happens from that. And we'll take it from there.
I wonder how many lights it will be.
Yeah. You got to put canon somewhere. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.